of the crazy speaking in tongues and the, what is it, parcel tongue?
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Nick Glover, Tim Wick, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, our guest is Kyle Decker from Fang & Talon, Super Academy, and the Minnesota Renaissance Festival. We talk about his religious upbringing and how he got to where he is now.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Hi, welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Nick Glover, joined as always by my co-hosts, Molly Glover.
Hello.
And Tim Wick.
Hi.
And this week, our guest is Kyle Decker, who is, you might know him from...
He's a Fearless Comedy Productions member.
He is a Fearless Comedy Productions member. He worked on web series Fang & Talon and more recently Super Academy. And he's here to talk about some of his religious background.
Hello. Hello. He's also, what do we want? He's the winner of the 2015 Best New Act at the Minnesota Renaissance Festival.
With my partner, Ted Finrod.
That's true. Right. Another fearless member.
Is two-person act.
Yeah. So.
Well, whatever. Yes. You were there. You won.
True.
You
won. Absolutely. Yes.
It you was went, I was at the awards ceremony. You were both up on stage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
Molly was technically at the awards ceremony.
I was there.
You were so sick.
I was super sick.
Kyle... I don't know the specifics. What I mean, as we've joked about, kind of getting you on the show and talked about it, it's we always have said like, oh, it's Kyle's like crazy snake handler upbringing. Is that how much of an exaggeration is that statement?
The snakes is a bit of an exaggeration, but
you were not part of a snake cult.
But no, but my fun fact: my parents did meet in a cult.
Oh,
and were married. Their marriage was the person who officiated their wedding was the cult leader.
Which cult?
It was a Branch Davidian cult in central Illinois in the 70s.
Oh.
So the Branch Davidians had been around for a long time.
Yeah.
So this is their own wacky sector. And so my parents have been married. They were married. They didn't have me until 4 or 5 years later because they had to ask. To have children in the cult, you had to have permissions and everything.
Like breeding rights?
Breeding rights and stuff. So they actually, when they got out of the cult is when they actually started a family.
Wow, how'd they get out?
I think they just finally realized the guy was controlling everyone, and I think the cult itself just kind of broke up.
Okay.
So it was without suicides or anything. It was probably one of the most peaceful cult breakups in history.
That's pretty great.
I don't know anything about Branch Davidians. What is their bag?
I don't know much other than, you know, that's my... Mother and father have told me the story. They don't necessarily try and hide their past or anything.
And so they left that at part kind of around the same time they were going to start up a family because that was
Real quick, Branch Davidians are mostly known because they were the Waco group.
Yeah, correct.
And they are a branch of Seventh-day Adventists.
Mm. Yes.
And they, it's just, that's pretty much all it says. It's just a splinter. But, David Koresh was heir to the throne of a bunch of stuff in Waco. So,
wow.
Yeah.
So, a bunch of the members, you know, they decided it was too much and they settled in, Southern Illinois where I grew up, and they started their own. Non-denominational Protestant church, which originally started meetings in an old bank in a strip mall.
Your parents started a church.
Well, they were part of the founding members with some other members.
All right.
So it was like they literally met for weekly church meetings. They took the whole New Testament. A church is any time a group of Christians meet together. So, of course, in America, it's really easy to say you're a church.
Oh, yeah.
The tax breaks and everything. So they started...
As Stephen Colbert has...
Yeah.
John Oliver.
John Oliver.
So they started... I believe it was in an old strip. My memories are hazy because I was a toddler at the time. But I remember frequently going to church in like an old bank building or an old strip mall. Something like that where they'd haul chairs out of a closet, put it up, and they're...
Oh,
you know... And at the time, they didn't have a pastor, so they would just take turns. The members, you know, teaching Bible lessons and everything. And eventually they got money together and they bought an old church building and hired a pastor who ended up being a con artist. It was pretty great. Later on, he had been like, this guy ended up being, his name was Chris Hayward. I've tried Googling him to find information if he's ever been to jail or anything.
Yeah.
But it turned out he's never been to seminary school. He worked as he grew up in the 70s and 80s where, you know, the whole catch me if you can, as long as you could forge documents,
right,
you could do. And he was one of those guys.
He forged like a seminary certificate.
So, so he became
what
this.
What a weird thing.
So he
think.
Led the church, and the church bought him a house. You know, they had the prisoners and a car and gave him a salary and everything.
Oh,
and
the church
God.
Didn't think to keep all that in the church's name just in case he left and they got a different.
I believe they did. They were
but
smart
still,
enough to do that.
Still, though, still, yeah, I mean, yeah.
But,
you're living rent free, driving a car, getting paid yeah. money that they can't get back from you.
Got to work like, what, 2 or 3 hours a week?
You just make up some bullshit. I mean, you got to read the Bible, I suppose. That's a downside.
Well, and they're already like a hippie commune church, so it's not like they're expecting some kind of like high and mighty knowledge of arcane ritual. Like, they just want someone to rap to them about God.
Arcane ritual.
Yeah, so it was called Christian Fellowship Church.
Okay.
Fairly generic.
Yeah, fairly generic.
First church of churching.
But what I remembered is, I mean, I went to church 3 or 4 days a week. There was Wednesday night service. There was Saturday night service. 8 a.m. for Sunday school.
It's like Catholic
and
stuff,
then,
yep.
And then, but the thing is, the church services were insanely long because Sunday school would end at 9, you'd have 20 minutes or so between, the service started at 9:30 or something, and then they would do music, they would sing, do music for an hour, and they would put the hymnals on overhead projectors, so there's, on either side of the chapel, there just these, it was always women who did this too, which I never thought much of at the time, it was always women who would put the words to the music on overhead projectors, and for most of the time they even had a live band. They had like dudes with long hair playing guitars and drums and a keyboard playing Christian, contemporary Christian music and some hymns and everything.
I could see the appeal. I mean,
it seems like a lot of work for a bunch of hippies.
But they're very like right wing. Like they're very, very pro-life. Like, I remember going to as a child, I was probably 7 or 8 at the time. So I did everything my parents said, and everything they said was, you know, truth. Going to like a flea market or something in the main area of my hometown, they closed on Main Street. People set up tables and sell whatever.
Yeah.
And we set up a pro-life booth and had horrible pictures of aborted fetuses and everything.
Yeah.
And here I was, 7 or 8 years old, judging people.
Oh,
for,
of course,
your
of course.
Parents organized that?
The church
the,
did.
The church, but your
and
parents
it was
just
our,
church.
Our family had a shift to work the booth.
They were shareholders in the church, in a way.
Or,
like,
however, I don't know all the business details. I was a kid at the time.
Yeah. Right.
But I just remember, like, working shifts at the booth, you know, very pro-choice, very anti-gay rights, you know, listening
Not pro-choice, pro-life.
Pro-life, yeah. Listening to Focus on the Family on the radio and donating to them and all that kind of stuff. That's you know, and then but one of the weird regular things they did at the church was bring in people to tell their, I found, their born-again story.
So they were really more of a, were really more of a born-again, right-wing church, as opposed to like you know, your let's go make a church with love and peace and Jesus's messages. It was more of a like, we're born again in the Lord and no church fits our anger.
Yeah, and you could wear jeans and have long hair. Like, they didn't enforce like formal dress code.
Sure.
I mean, that was expected. It was like, you just had to come and share the,
and hate,
you know,
a lot of people.
And on its face value, that's actually not bad, you know. We accept you as you are, you know, judge, but
gay.
Then some of the, yeah, exactly. But
or
and then,
an abortion.
But all, I started, like, the inklings as a kid, and I was homeschooled because they didn't want me to learn evolution either.
Yeah,
I was homeschooled
really?
All the way through till the 7th grade.
Wow.
Until I demanded from my parents to go to public school starting in the 8th grade. And
good
that
for you.
Was, you know, and it took a long time for me to really kind of get past, honestly, the almost brainwashing about how evolution's bad. And actually,
wasn't
until like 2 years in college I started like, hey, let's look at stuff from studies and with logic and reason. And
how did you get there? Like, was it, I mean, were your parents right? Was it exposure to public school that gave you the bad ideas led you to learning?
The one thing my parents didn't censor in homeschooling was reading. I could read any books that I want. It was just... And I love books. I don't read as much as I used to, but reading was my kind of key to getting out of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I could read anything. I could read Voltaire, and I could read, you know, I could read Thomas Paine, and I can read, and I just ate up history books and just reading, you know, world history and American history all the time. And those kind of inklings, like, you know, the radical thought in literature, is what kind of opened my mind. you know, awesome. And that's what, but the biggest thing was all of the people witnessing in that church. They all would witness, but then they also always directed you to their table with all the things they sold. And it always made me, wait, this is a job for these people. These people make a living selling, you know, VHSs and cassette that tapes story. Of their testimony and the pamphlet, the comic book pamphlet. So, like, you know, a couple of these former Hell's Angels, they talked about their rough Hell's Angels life and how God saved them from it. But, you know, to stay edgy, they still had a brand to maintain. So they still rode motorcycles to the church, sure. You know, and still wore jackets with the cross on it. Well, instead, sure. You know, but it was a brand. And I started realizing it was all branding. It was all a profit scheme. And there was a guy, there's a
profit scheme. Oh, yeah.
I wish I did it on purpose. Terrible. But and one of and there was some, you know, I didn't doubt that some of these people had legitimate stories. I remember one, there was a Vietnam vet who got his face half melted off by a grenade, like a phosphorus grenade they exploded with. Oh, yeah. And he was literally, like, you know, scarred face and mangled. Yeah. But he had a fairly powerful story, but he was selling books and stuff too, you know, and everything.
Yeah.
You know, and... But as a kid, you know, this guy's a war vet. This is cool, you know,
yeah.
And everything. And but they were all making money and selling videos and all this stuff.
I wonder if the church got a cut of that as well. Like if it was like, you can come to our church and set up your table and preach to our guys.
I would bet that the church paid them
a tithe.
Yeah, I would. Well, I would almost bet that the church had.
I would think the church actually paid him an appearance fee.
Interesting.
Yeah. So and I don't. And I bet they got didn't have to pay taxes on anyone because they just registered as a religious organization, sure. Potentially.
What's like the craziest thing that you can think of? Like was it the face melty guy?
The funniest thing I ever did, this church became really big. They were big about doing plays with the kids. So that was kind of my first initial exposure to theater and performance. Yeah. Was performing. So I was the Good Shepherd one Christmas. But then we did one play one year. I think I was about 10 or 12, and it was about a dysfunctional hospital around the holiday season. And it was poorly. I would love to like get and read the script and make fun of it now, because yeah. I played one of the three disorderlies.
Oh Jesus.
And I'm and their names were Larry, Moe, and Curly.
Uh-huh. Sure.
So I mean it was a real stretch. And we did a rap because this was the late 80s early 90s.
So you literally like did the movie The Disorderlies.
Yeah. Well, but we were just like came in and disrupted, and the nurse, the only adult actor was the nurse who actually, you know, guided everyone and taught them the Jesus, whatever the Jesus message
adults of the
play
know
was.
The truth, which is Jesus. P.S.
All I remember is I did like a baby Jesus rap with the other two disorderlies. Yeah. And it was like a late 80s early 90s like Vanilla Ice style but like right wing Christians rap.
I am rapping,
and it was just I thought it was so cool
Jesus
at the time.
Oh, man.
And I would give there's a video of this somewhere. I would give anything to film that video and just put it on YouTube and riff track it or something.
Was this like a Pentecostal church? Was there speaking in tongues?
Yes, we did do speaking in tongues. Oh, it wasn't an official Pentecostal, like they were just and I could never explain it, like, well, what kind of church are we? Grandma and Grandpa are Presbyterian. Well, we're non-denominational. We don't like putting labels on people, you know? Like,
except for when we call them faggots
or
like
homosexuals. Yeah. Or baby killers.
Right. Yeah, right? Right. Yeah. There are labels and then there's labels. Yeah.
We don't like to label ourselves.
Yeah.
So they never, like, we don't do that. You know, as long as someone's Christian, that's okay. Catholics are a little different, but Catholics are still a gray area.
Yeah.
Catholics drink alcohol. That's a little...
Oh, were they like, no alcohol?
There
no
was
cigarettes?
Never,
no
yeah.
Drugs.
Yeah,
caffeine.
That too. Yeah, caffeine was fine. There was lots of coffee.
They were you know, bread and grape juice, not bread and wine.
Yes,
kind
that's of. Communion. One of the things as a kid, I had to help get communion ready. So I remember sitting there, in the kitchen in the church in the back. And my dad's actually a environmental chemist, and so he was like, he got tired of trying to pour grape juice, so he brought in like one of the pipette bottles, like a clean one. And so then I just remember with a pipette bottle filling them the little tiny plastic cups in this big metal thing with grape juice.
I just gotta tell you, when I was a kid, my favorite churches were the ones that had grape juice. Yeah. That was the greatest thing ever.
Well, I love communion because it meant a snack in the middle
of a big fan
two
of the
and
wine,
a half hour sermon.
Surprising no one, but like mostly because like I didn't like it, and I had because we were raised Catholic, I had this real fucked up sense that the only way that it was truly like church was if you were suffering. So like I didn't like the wine, so I felt like that was like my they really drilled into me that I was just born bad, and everything I wanted or did or needed was bad, and that the only way that I could ever be good was to just like do miserable things to myself to make myself feel better.
So the only prevailing thing that's really started making me, you know, start questioning my faith and wanting to get out of the church and get into public school was the complete denial, like questioning authority. That was the biggest crime in the church.
Oh, like wow. The
elders or the pastor, like, or the Sunday school teacher, like correcting them. That was probably the biggest taboo.
Or even asking questions, or
even to the point. Yeah. But as I said, I was really into books and really, really into history. Like I ended up getting my bachelor's degree in history. I've always been into history, and I remember just, you know, certain things like Sunday school. You know, they telling the story of David and Goliath, and you know, yeah, the Hebrews, they were so disadvantaged. They had wooden swords against iron, like. No, they didn't have wooden swords. This would have been the Bronze Age. They probably were using, like, copper or bronze swords. And the Philistines did have iron, which were superior. But no one ever used wooden swords in history, and you're wrong. Because I was a kid.
Yeah,
I didn't.
Yeah,
and right. then, like, and then I would get you're pulled seeing, I would get yeah. pulled into the pastor's office with my parents, asking why they didn't teach me not to question authority. Yeah. Just flat
why
out.
Why are you not honoring thy mother and father? Right. And by extension, all adults.
But really, yeah. you were trying to contribute,
I know something about this.
Yeah. And the whole thing, when you look in American history, well, you know, the dark, you know, there's lots of dark elements, but the kind of core thing that, you know, at its root, the at least idea of America that makes America great is we buck the norm, and we have always fought authority to an extent. Mm-hmm. That's kind of at least in the national DNA of the thing. So part of me is like, really, it's supposed to be. And part of me in my love of history, like, this goes against, you know, kind of like how our country was founded. It just always seemed weird, and that inner internal conflict. I remember, actually, I wasn't homeschooled all the way 7th grade. I did spend 1 year in 6th grade. My mom had lots of health problems growing up, mental and actual health. I'll throw it on. My mom is actually bipolar.
I'm just giggling at mental and actual health.
She had endometriosis, was physical, in and out of the hospital too.
Had bipolar disorder.
And bipolar disorder. Yeah. So, I mean, it was an interesting childhood growing up, because when you're homeschooled, you either woke up with like Martha Stewart mom who had blueberry pancakes and had a lesson
manic
plan,
mom.
Or the mom who never got out of bed in the morning.
Depressive mom.
Fend for yourself. But
it's part of why I don't want kids.
But like, one year they're like, well, we still don't want you to learn evolution. So they did enroll me for a year in a private Baptist run, Southern Baptist run school that was K through 12.
God.
And the vast majority of it was either weirdos like my parents, right wings, or the high school level kids who it was absolutely their last chance to get a diploma.
Get them
before, so they're true, like juvenile delinquents and
like
everything.
ALC school.
And that year in that school was one of the most traumatic years in my entire childhood.
How old was that?
I was sixth grade.
So you're like 11 years old.
11 or 12.
Ginger, freckly, homeschooled kid.
Smarter than everyone there. Because I read
nerdy.
So much. But here's the... I don't even think the guy who was our teacher even had a college degree. I can't prove it, because his wife was the main teacher, who was a certified state teacher and all. And she got sick and he filled in for her. So I don't know what his background was. But I remember we were doing like... our section on the history of the 20th century. He was talking about the Berlin Wall. And I remember this thing. It was like, the Berlin Wall goes completely between East and West Germany. I'm like, no, it doesn't. It splits Berlin in half. That's why it's called the Berlin Wall. And I got sent to the principal's office for questioning the teacher. And then he was like, and then Hong Kong belongs to the, you know, United Kingdom and will till 2077. No, it's 1977 as a contract, and it's going to be a big deal in a few years.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And then, you know, and like, they can't even get it. Like, they're not even teaching. What am I learning here?
For what it's worth, if it was a private school, there are no rules about what qualifications a teacher has to have. The school gets to decide. So that's fun.
Yeah. So this school had corporal punishment too.
The school gets to decide.
You think that in order to qualify as an educational facility
for children
legally, they would have to meet some standards?
Yeah, you have to have a college degree usually.
So,
but not
he might have had a college degree, but I don't know.
But not
know
like
what
a teaching degree. Like, you can have a degree in, you know, like
it's like
nutrition.
A university.
Yeah.
You don't need a degree in teaching to be a professor at a university.
No, you just have to have a college degree.
You need a degree in the field you are a professor in.
You don't even need a degree. If you're an expert, they're not going to hire you without one.
There are a few exceptions.
There's not like a legal requirement.
If you're like a physicist who never got a degree but has his amazing research writing, and it's like, this guy doesn't have a degree, but he's got 20 honorary degrees now.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, maybe they'll let him teach.
Well, and the rules are different for early education, so like preschool and then kindergarten, and I think up through fourth grade. Generally, that's where they're a little stricter because they have to make sure you're not going to diddle the kids. So they make there's a little bit stricter licensing requirements.
Can't diddle them until they're at least.
Until they're in fifth grade. So. Fifth grade, it's
open season. Yeah,
exactly.
But in sixth grade, they can totally spank you.
Yeah.
But the track things was that they're really strict dress code about the things you could wear. And now looking at back now was all about really, especially towards the female students. Mm-hmm. It was very repressive. And then we had gym.
Could the girls wear pants?
Yeah. They had to wear dresses. And they had to be like below like
the knee.
A certain So it was long. And gym class, they couldn't even wear shorts. They had to wear culottes.
Yep.
I didn't know what culottes were till I went to that school.
One of the worst things to do to girls.
But the most
culottes.
Culottes are not good on anyone. They are not attractive on anyone.
Yeah.
The most traumatic thing was gym class for me. I actually liked sports and all. I played baseball growing up. You know, I was in it. But the school was pretty small. There's probably from K through 12, 60 students, you know.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And so gym class to split it up, and it was the pastor slash principal's son, who was like 22 years old, was the gym teacher, so he had a job, taught gym class, and he was lazy, didn't actually want a class. And sixth grade through 12 had gym class together. So, you know, let's put these 10 and 12-year-olds with the 19-year-old juvenile delinquents in gym class and watch what things happen.
This would be
good. Go-to gym class activity was dodgeball.
Of course it was.
Of course it was. He's a fucking masochist.
And the school didn't have actual the dodgeballs. They used soccer balls and volleyballs.
Oh, fuck.
And I just remember they'd line us up. So, and then he always like, let's do 6th through 8th grade versus 9 through 12. I'm serious. This happened like week after week. It was every Friday. Was
prepubescence versus adult men.
like, am I going to get a concussion this week?
Oh shit!
And so we never ran towards the balls in the middle. We ran to the very back wall, and it was a corrugated steel, like Kwanzaa Hut style, gymnasium.
Yep.
You know, like airplane hangar almost.
Yep. Uh-huh.
And we'd hug towards the back. We just hear these. I still to this day can like close my eyes and hear the whistling. Of the soccer balls, shoom, you know, and then they hit the corrugated and dent the corrugated steel. They would leave dents.
Oh my God.
And occasionally you'd catch one and they would be out and they're like, throw it back. No. Until they made us and then we'd roll them as slow as we could and then high toward. And then I just remember, like, once you got out, like this row of 6th through 8th graders, like with red faces and, you know, watering eyes, crying on the sideline round after round. So, yes.
Jesus Christ.
Some of the most traumatic years of my childhood.
That is some shit-ass GP.
And what's amazing is you wanted to go to, like, you somehow knew that wasn't school. Like, even though you'd only been homeschooled, you knew this wasn't school.
I'd watch John Hughes
So when you went back to homeschool, you were like, no, I still want to go to actual school, though, please. Fuck you pain school.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So that was, what was that called? It was called, like, Christian Academy at the Baptist Temple, I believe is what it was called.
Yeah.
So are your parents still active in...
My dad goes regularly to a Methodist church, and he's still a young young earth creationist.
Oh, yeah, he's a young earth creationist. Oh, he always was.
We went and saw, what's his name, Ken Ham live when I was a child. My dad has read all of his books, has most of his books signed by Ken Ham.
You said...
Which my dad's an environmental chemist. Like, my dad is legitimately a scientist.
That's super harsh.
But it's like a little redneck scientific lab that has 40 people. Wow. They mostly test soil and water.
I was going to say, do they just like look for evidence of Satan? Or like, what is it that they
do? No, they literally just do like...
test for brimstone?
They do like... chromatography and stuff. Right. So like a farmer goes, hey, does my soil have chlorine in it? Test my soil. That's basically what he does.
I see.
So I guess, once you know how to learn, use the lab equipment and read, you know. I mean, he has a science degree, but so my dad still is,
He is a scientist
to a degree. So my mom has, has tried to admit, He's like, I'm sorry you made a childhood, but you don't understand how controlling it was and everything. I'm like, I answered the point, but you also had children. Like, you were subjecting your children to this. And
you
I
have
don't
brother
know.
And sisters?
I have two younger sisters.
How much younger?
I have one that's 2 years younger than me, so she's 32 now.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have one who, she's almost 9 years younger than me, so she's 25, 24.
Did they have to go through, I mean, are they, what's their situation?
My sister's 2 years younger than me. Didn't mind the homes because she never really studied. She was never, and my depending on what mom, manic or whatever, she rarely was focused. So when she finally went to public school, she ended up dropping out of high school.
Sure.
Yeah. And then eventually got her GED.
No one taught her how to learn.
Got her GED, and then she fell in with, you know, bad kids. She did lots of drugs. She has five children, but only two are like her actual biological children.
Okay.
So she ended up briefly marrying this guy who was 10 years older than her, an alcoholic, like truly abusive relationship and everything, mm-hmm. had two kids. Eventually, when he, and then he, she took in her his three other kids from a previous relationship.
Oh, that's nice.
Because the mother was in jail for cooking meth.
So she's is she still Christian? She seems
she
like,
took him in. She's a good person.
Yeah.
But she's also, like, she, like, just from basically having... My mother was always claimed her mother was very controlling and everything. So it was like, I can't do that to my daughter. So my sister's 2 years literally grew up with no discipline and no structure.
Well, and
so,
she was bipolar.
But her way through life is, I don't, you can tell me this stove is hot, but until I burn my hand on it, I won't believe you. Exactly how my mother is too.
Before we go to the five questions. You have a kid.
Yes.
He's a baby still. He's a toddler.
He'll be three in March.
Toddler. Yeah. Okay. Tiny. Yeah.
But he's still little.
He's almost people.
Close to people.
Are you raising him without faith? Yes.
Well, I mean, my wife is Catholic, but she's not really. She's taken him to mass a couple times, but she's like, the stares I get showing up with a kid without a husband.
By herself.
Is just she hasn't felt comfortable. So I'm
I'm sorry. Fuck them for that. If they knew.
She has a wedding ring.
If they knew that she was trying to show her son what she believes because she's in a mixed marriage in terms of that, they'd be like, oh, you're a saint for bringing him because of your evil devil husband. But instead they're judging her she's divorced.
She's still kind of, not. I don't even know if my wife has, but. It's one of those, I want him, I'm going to teach him a lot, and if he wants to go to church when he's 8 or 9, I'll start taking, I'll let him, it should be his conscious decision, not something I
Unitarian
force on
church,
him.
Just
informed choices.
Unitarian church.
Informed choices, I want him to read books and be educated and make his own informed decision, cool. But he don't, logic, reason, and intelligence, that's how I want to raise, and human empathy.
He's named after a sci-fi character, so we got to get this kid, he's got
Let's move on to five questions. Five questions. Molly, do you want to start us off?
Yes. Kyle, what's a movie that you will stop and watch anytime it's on?
Anytime it's on, I will stop and watch. It's a terrible movie, but I love it. I will stop and watch Con Air.
Yes! That's a great
because
answer.
It's put the buddy filled down. With so many amazing actors with this truly terrible script, and Nick Cage at 11, and John Malkovich at 11, and Dave Chappelle's in it, and
everyone's
John Cusack,
and
Cole Meany, and it's just like all these ridiculous, over-the-top characters with such a stupid plot, but these great action set pieces, and just some stupid lines, let go of the bunny.
Just all
the
concept that it's like, let's put all of these dangerous felons on a plane.
Dangerous smart felons.
Yeah, smart. And also I think aren't they violent? It's not like they're drug lord masterminds. Felons.
It's a man who's raped 100 women and then a criminal mastermind serial killer. And
a guy who's really good at escaping. A guy who's really good at escaping from planes.
Steve Buscemi's in it too. He plays a serial killer.
And Nick Cage.
Who's just catching a ride home.
Yeah.
Has this magical mullet and his accent goes from you get a complete tour of the southern United States with his accent throughout the movie as well. That movie.
Fantastic.
That's a good one. Question number two, what is your most prized or geekiest possession?
My most prized possession is I have the original Dungeons & Dragons Player's Handbook, Dungeon Master's Guide, and Monster Manual signed by Gary Gygax.
What? Yeah. So that is a prize. Pretty nerdy. That's a twofer right there.
Do you have an original Deities and Demigods?
I do.
Yeah.
The original was in like a three-ring binder tape.
No. The original Deities and Demigods is the one that has the copyright material in it. It's got like...
Oh, yeah.
It's got like the Cthulhu stuff in there. Yeah.
When it took a lot longer to track someone down for stealing your IP.
Yeah.
Back when it wasn't just like somebody tattled on you on the internet seconds.
Yeah. It was, who cares, this asshole's printing them in his garage type thing. Yeah, I mean, no, like, Dungeons and Dragons.
I got them signed. I brought them. They weren't in great condition, but I went to... Lake Geneva Gaming Convention, like 90 people in Lake Geneva in 2006.
Yeah.
He was so like all the, like Frank Mensah and the guy who wrote the DDDs and them guys wrote the air quotes. Sorry,
it's
that
funny.
Doesn't work
I
on a podcast.
I assumed you were going to say that you got it at a Gen Con because of being in like the Indiana, Illinois.
Actually, this past year with Fantasy Light is the first time I've ever been at Gen Con.
That's crazy.
Because I've never had, when I've had the time, I haven't had the money.
Yep.
So it's one of those.
That's great.
But I went to a lot of smaller conventions. Sure. That one.
Yeah.
In Lake Geneva.
So, question number three is if you could make one supernatural, spiritual, magical thing real, what would it be?
The Force.
The Force!
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm a huge Star Wars fan.
That's a good answer.
I'm a huge Star Wars fan. If, like, the Force was an energy field, not bacteria, but energy field that people, like, could manipulate and tap into.
Some people.
That would be cool. I mean, can you imagine,
it's a crapshoot, though.
And in current society, there wouldn't be, like, Jedi and Sith. There'd just be people, there'd be a professional athlete who uses it to never miss shots in basketball and stuff.
I think
it'd be really cool.
They would ban it from sports. They would ban Force-sensitives.
They'd put them in their own sport, their own Jedi sport.
Or instead of drug testing, they'd be testing for Force-sensitivity before you could join. Oh, yeah.
The Olympics, they'd definitely be checking for Force-sensitivity.
That's awesome.
So, yeah.
That's a good answer.
I like the idea of that would like throw into so much about accountability for like Good Samaritan laws. The idea that if someone could have used the Force to save you, and you find out later they didn't or whatever, maybe they didn't even know.
Or
known.
Casinos all need to hire one Force sensitive person to sit at the door and like scan people on their way in.
Or like a Force cooler that shuts down.
Like they have something. They got like a Faraday cage for the Force, but like the whole casino is like.
Otherwise, people will be like. You know, manipulating the roulette wheel and all
you
that.
You're going to let me hit on 21.
Yeah.
I did the finger thing, just so you guys know. I did the cool Jedi finger thing. Question four. Say religion is gone. What would be the biggest problem humanity would face?
So the biggest thing I will say, as someone who's atheist and grew up in a very toxic Christian environment, there's a lot of Christian Christian organizations make up a bulk of like nonprofit, like feeding the homeless and stuff in the United States and all. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what would fill that void. And that's like, there's a lot of, you know, Habitat for Humanity has a lot of connections to the Christian community and everything.
No, Habitat Humanity is very Christian.
Yeah,
if religion was gone, do you think that those organizations would continue in a secular way?
I don't.
Without the churches there to push them forward or drive for people.
As a student of history, like religious organizations, whether it's a temple to Zeus or anything, always made this like centralized organization centers to put things like that together. So I don't know what would fill that void. And part of me is wondering, you know, how much of that would exist and how much would that fall to the wayside. And I think that could be a real risk without religion.
Because
having a unifying idea, believing in a bearded man in the sky that grants wishes, does bring people together.
Or more to the point, believing in retribution after death if you don't do good works now. Yeah. That's part of it, too.
Because
a lot of people are doing it for they are truly good and they are trying to do good, but a lot of people are like, we got to go do this because otherwise...
Some people believe... I'm not one of those people. Some people believe that there is no such thing as true and genuine altruism. All charity is
technically done
to give yourself a good feeling or whatever. Right. I don't necessarily believe that, but I mean, people that hold that view.
If we're saying that anything that gives you a good feeling doesn't automatically means it's a selfish act, then literally every second of your day is a selfish act.
Well, right.
Because breathing makes me feel good.
I think that the people that argue what Nick's talking about would argue that as well. That that yes. we are inherently selfish.
Those right. people are
that
boring.
We don't do all. Well, yeah, it's a really boring black really, and white view.
Well,
it's,
yeah.
I mean, there are certainly. I think you're right that would be a risk. But mm-hmm. on the other hand, there are secular organizations that do good. You know, there's the. There's Doctors Without Borders, which is a secular charity. Mm-hmm. You've got
Amnesty
Gates,
International,
Bill, yep. the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, yep. which you know Bill Gates is at least an agnostic.
Camp Quest. There's countless little ones yeah. too. That
it's just a matter of without religion, would people be as willing to donate give? Their time and resources to not just for those organizations, yeah. but running similar type
religion,
organizations. I think that people are
an organized workforce.
It's right. Like,
yeah. If there's a
churches organized to drive their membership to go volunteer.
Right.
That's a good yeah. point. The logistics. Who's yeah. doing yeah. the organizing?
I mean, because yeah. on the civil rights movement in the 50s and 60s was largely based on you know black churches mm-hmm. in the north
yeah.
and south.
Yeah.
And
community so centers kind of.
Community is, centers.
Yeah.
And,
my comedic instincts. I almost just said, "Why do they got to be black churches?" And I was like, "Oh right, they were literally black churches."
The churches were the buildings.
Yeah, they were made of black stone. You didn't know that.
I didn't know that.
question number five, what is your favorite quote?
My favorite quote, I have lots of historical. I'm going to go with one that kind of sums up like kind of how I live my life, how I approach like my professional career and all. Chesty Puller, one of the most famous United States Marines, and I was actually in the Marines.
Oh.
That's how I got away Hoorah. From home at 18. yep. Was like, hey, they'll get...
It makes so much more yeah. sense now, Kyle, that you're in the Marines, because when I first heard that, I was like, what?
Yeah. I was an oddball in the Marines. It was... But Chesty, one of the most famous, like he had five, like the most decorated. He's called Chesty because he had so many medals on his chest.
Uh huh.
But he said, paperwork will ruin a well run military. And you could extrapolate that to other factors in your life. Paperwork ruins a lot of awesome things.
I like that.
And so that's one of my favorite quotes.
I have a quote that a friend of mine said, a coworker said, that is very much in the same spirit, but it's like the tech support guy equivalent. And that's regarding conference calls. The fewer number of people there are on a call, the more productive and use of it is of everyone's time, to the point where the most productive phone call is just one person on the call themselves doing the work.
Yeah.
It's the bureaucracy makes work out of not work.
Yeah. That reminds me, when I was in the Marines, I was a judge advocate general's clerk. I didn't do anything hardcore.
Still, though.
We had
to get in.
We had one of the, like, running jokes in the military, you have all your inside jokes and all, was meeting was Navajo code talk for a waste of time. We're going to have a meeting. They're just actually using the Navajo code word for a waste of time.
We're going to go waste everyone's time.
Yeah, so.
Great. Well, thank you, Kyle, so much for being our guest and talking a little about your past and answering our five questions.
We totally didn't get to talk about talking and speaking in tongues.
We'll have to figure out a talking yeah. in tongues.
Talking
we'll do
in
an
tongues.
Entire episode in tongues.
Tongue talking.
Habada.
Tolkien yes. works, I'll tell you that much.
Oh yeah? Did you
Elvish?
Do that?
I did Elvish and Dwarvish sometimes. I did St. Quals for Lord of the Rings. And no one, they were like, and if they said, wait, are you questioning my strength in God? And you could always
oh,
get away with it.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
So, I gotta learn English and go to a Pentecostal church.
If you want to answer our five questions, you can send your answers to fivequestions@geeksofgod.com. Kyle, when is Super Academy weekly on Escapist?
It's,
or?
Well, it's, we filmed the whole thing. We kind of released it quasi-Netflix. We released a new episode every Friday, but we kind of wanted to release it pretty quickly so people mm-hmm. could binge watch it. So it's on The Escapist, and it's also on YouTube. So
okay,
you just,
cool.
Honestly, you do a Google search for Super Academy, the series,
yeah.
and you'll find links to the show, whether you want to watch it on The Escapist or on YouTube.
Right on. And then at the Renaissance Festival, you are...
I am Wart, the sometimes adequate squire to the sometimes useful knight, Sir Tedward.
Great. Award-winning act.
Yes.
Thanks so much for being our guest. And as always, everybody else, we'll see you next Tuesday.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.
That's a cunt joke.
Bye isn't a cunt joke.
What? I never knew until now.
The spirit is inside her.
Oh, no. It's Elvish.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts at geekswithoutgod.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod.
We're geeks.
We're geeks. We're geeks without God.
We're geeks.
We're geeks. We're geeks without God.
We're geeks. Geeks without God.
Larry Elmore, man. He's like homeless man's Frank Frazetta.